Good morning.
Morning, morning.
Now, this is going to be somewhat, I think, of an unconventional talk. I want you to imagine that we're hanging out at Starbucks, sitting at a table, and I'm sharing with you an experience that I've had. And I'm not sharing it like as if it were a talk that's prepared for, but sort of a freewheeling, you know, just hanging out kind of conversation. And as you know, I wasn't here last week, and I was via Zoom at the Upaya Zen Center in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And over the years, off and on, I've written haiku and really enjoy it and appreciate haiku, both contemporary and of the masters like Shiki and Basho. And so I got this, I'm a member of the Upaya Zen Center, and I got this email, which was a two-day program on haiku, and it was called The Way of Haiku. I don't know, it just rang a bell, and I connected to it, so I decided to do this. And so what I'm going to talk about was the experience, and I'm sort of imagining it that I was actually there, you know. So before I do that, just want to, how many people here know what haiku is? Okay, so I thought everybody. So anyway, so I've done this over the years, off and on, and but they were usually for myself, and then, I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, both through the encouragement of Roshi Ray and my friend Alan, have been encouraged to start submitting these haikus. So about a month ago, I've started. I haven't heard back anything yet. But so usually the way that works is they acknowledge the receipt, and then it, you know, could be months before they actually make a decision and it's published. So this is the book that Alan and I did. It's called Embracing Life as It Is: Lessons from Wabi Sabi Haiku and Zen. And I'm using this. I had two books out, and one I had highlighted the things that I wanted to read, but apparently I left that home. But again, we're having coffee, so, you know, well, hang on, let me see if I can find it here. So, Master Basho, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with, is considered probably the greatest haiku poet of Japan, and it's attributed to him that he is the originator of haiku. And then there are other haikuists, Busan, Shiki, and I'm blocking on the rest of them, but there's a whole, you know, maybe 10, 12 famous haiku poets. So Master Basho, perhaps the greatest haiku poet in Japan, introduced the form in the middle of the 17th century, and it differed markedly from other poetic forms. The language used was ordinary. It was pedestrian rather than pedantic. Typical poetic devices such as rhyming, simile, personification, metaphor, and hyperbole were not used. It was really an expression of a particular moment in time, and it was done so in three lines, and the classic haiku was 575. Now, I'll mention it now, that the spirit of this workshop that I attended, they referred to as Big Roof Haiku, meaning that as haiku has come from the east to the west, it has expanded and materialized into many different forms of haiku, many different expressions. And personally, I like it. It's very interesting, and I'll share some of that. But there are people who take a different point of view because it leaves the traditional haiku and starts to introduce new variations, new interpretations, and the fear is that it will destroy, upset the traditional form of haiku. So Basho said, haiku is simply what is happening in this place at this time. It is eternal now. There is no other time than this moment. The past is no more. The future is not yet. And so he says, deep in the mountains, the great temple bell is struck. You hear it reverberating in the morning air, and all thoughts disappear from your mind. There is nothing that is you. There is nothing that is not you. There is only the sound of the bell. And there are a number of enlightenment stories in the history of Zen where a student is awakened by the sound of a bell. And that sound and the haiku stop the mind. And there's just that bong of the bell. So, as I mentioned, you know, the Western poetry may use poetic devices, such as alliteration, metaphor, onomatopoeia, personification, rhyme, simile, hyperbole. So in this book, we compare a Western poet's poem about a frog with the most referenced haiku of all time by Basho, also about a frog. So the poem is by Susan Henderson. How many frogs does it take, dying in the dust, croaking in the crusted puddles? How many frog legs limping lamely? Oh, how true. It ain't easy being green when life has gone all obscene. How many frogs must fall before we all recall the heart of life and the miracle of it all? And then this is the famous haiku by Basho. The old pond, a frog jumps in, plop. So very different expressions. Now, it's important that this is just about variation. It's not about conventional poetry is better or it's not better than haiku. They're just different ways of expressing the truth with a small t. So I just want to share a haiku of Allen's that I think sort of captured what I'm talking about. Pier sunset in old wooden baskets, crabs crawl on crabs. Now, I'll try to give you a picture of how the setup of this was. This was for the people who, there were 430 people that attended. And I don't know how many people were actually in the Zendo itself, but many of the people were from different places around the country. And so if you were to be looking at it on Zoom, it was sort of like I am here. There was Kaz Tanahashi that was sitting here, Natalie Goldberg sitting here, and then Joan Halifax who was sitting over here. And the two main people that led the workshop were Kaz Tanahashi and especially Natalie Goldberg. And Joan was more of a facilitator, although she did participate off and on. So I want to tell you a little bit about the different people that I just mentioned. And now, anybody familiar with Kaz Tanahashi?
Yes.
Yeah. And he's 90 years old. And he's got, like, in classic Japanese tradition, a very long, narrow beard that comes down to here. And he's as opposed to Natalie, he's very reserved, in the good sense of the word. So he's an accomplished calligrapher, Zen teacher, author, and translator of Buddhist text from Japanese to English and to Chinese. And most notably, he's noted for his translations of Dogen. So Roshi Joan, this is an amazing list of accomplishments. She's a Zen teacher, an anthropologist, an ecologist, a civil rights activist, a hospice caregiver, and the author of 7 books on Zen. Truly a person who has no spare time. She's the guiding teacher and abbot of Upaya Zen Center, which, as I mentioned, is in San Francisco, New Mexico. And interesting also is that she's a Dharma successor to both Bernie Glassman and Thich Nhat Hanh. And her social activism comes out of her having studied with Bernie. So she talked about using haiku as a way of bringing attention to social issues. And so part of it was to write haiku, expressing that. Now, one of the things about this is people that were there, that were present, would just raise their hand and they could share a haiku. The other people that were out here in the vast United States, there was a method that you could, on the computer, that you could bring attention to yourself, and then there was a person who was charged with making the connection and reading the haiku. Unfortunately, I never was able to figure out how to do it. So I was not a participant in that sense. So these are 3 haiku that I wrote in response to the request to express social issues. Homeless man, waiting outside the soup kitchen, his shirt inside out. Under a blanket, a homeless woman argues with herself. Homeless man, invisible to passers-by, suffers alone. So, did I already ask about that? Who knows Natalie Goldberg? Has ever heard of Natalie Goldberg? Okay. In the vernacular, she's a pisser. It was so much fun. She is such a character in the most loving sense. You know, she's like the kind of person you can't not like. And very funny, very bright. She's been involved in the world of Zen as a Zen student. I don't think she's a teacher, but for 40 years. So here, but this other, I had notes all over the place, and what I've tried to do is put them together so I could talk to you about this stuff. So I may be hesitating and not recalling stuff or hopefully filling stuff in. But anyway, I mean, I knew who she was from having been in this profession for a long time. But so what I did was, just so that I could communicate who she is in terms of her accomplishments, I looked some of this stuff up. So Natalie is an American popular author and speaker. She is best known for a series of books which explore writing as Zen practice. And those books are Three Simple Lines, that's a book about haiku, Writing Down the Bones, Wild Mind, which is she refers to it as living the writer's life, The Great Spring, which is writing and the zigzag path of Zen, and Long Quiet Highway, which is about waking up in America. Now, Natalie is also a painter. She's practiced Zen, as I said, for 40 years. And interestingly enough, the Oprah Winfrey Show sent a film crew to spend a day with her for a segment on spirituality that covered her writing, teaching, painting, and walking meditation. And she also lives in New Mexico, northern New Mexico. And as I said, very funny and charming lady. Now, one of the characteristics about her, which adds to the charm, which adds to who she was born and raised in Brooklyn. And she's got a very heavy Brooklyn accent. And so she was teased a number of times throughout this, but, you know, because she's well known there and she's got a lot of friends, but they did tease her about her Brooklyn accent. And in fact, one of the people, and I didn't get it written down, that's the other thing. Sometimes, you know, I get so involved in listening, it was sort of a pain in the neck to try and take notes, you know. So there's gaps in here, but somebody did write a haiku about her Brooklyn accent, but I didn't write it down. So there were a number of presenters. The first was Natalie. Now, she appeared, other people appeared off and on through the weekend. So this is, you know, based on my notes, it's just a brief summary of what she talked about. So she talked about herself. First, she mentioned that she had been to Japan several times, and she was there really in pursuit to learn haiku. And so after I think it was the third time she returned, she wrote the book that I mentioned, Three Simple Lines. And she talked about how challenging, now this is a woman who's an accomplished writer and artist, and she talked about how challenging it was to write haiku. And this is a quote, she said, "Haiku still stymies me." And she mentioned, and it wasn't a joke, she was serious, that every 200th haiku she thought had worth. So, from my own experience, I just write them down as they come, and then later I'll go over them, and there'll be a lot of lines drawn through them. So she says, in haiku, we're challenged to take a leap, to experience something new, realize an aha moment. And the last line offers that aha moment. And this is, I didn't write it down. This is a famous haiku. The temple bell chimes, and the sound keeps coming out of the flowers. And then she did this exercise. We had to write about something that has occurred to her or something that we've experienced, you know, recently in our life. And then we're supposed to write a haiku about it. And so, and you know, she gave us 10 minutes. There were, she did a number of these exercises, but my notes on them were really sketchy. So this one I sort of remembered. So as I said, it was to write something that has occurred or that we have experienced. And so I'll share with you the haiku that I wrote. This was in Clinton, where I live. By the falls, drinking an espresso, now cold. Okay, so now this is Kaz's presentation. And as I said, he's 90 years old. So again, this is going to be sort of sketchy because I'm putting together just errant notes on a piece of paper. So he suggested that haiku in the context of Japanese poetry is considered a song. And he talked technically about the form 575, about rhythm and pattern. And he also told us that the haiku was a form of communication in Japan. Now, I didn't get this clearly, but the 575 in Japan, if it's translated into English, there are either more or less syllables because they don't go together like that. So that's one of the difficulty in the translation of the Japanese haiku into English. So what's happened is I think there are more syllables in English. So a lot of the Western writers seek their haiku are shorter. And then also through time, convention, Shiki, in fact, who was a famous haikuist back in Basho's day, said something to the effect, if necessary, break the rules. So there was the traditionalist, the famous haiku poet Basho, and then it started already where haiku started to slowly have other variations of it. And certainly, as I mentioned, that's what happened when it came here. So Kaz was saying that Japanese is sort of a flat language. And then he mentioned, you know, that haiku is not good or bad, right or wrong. It's what captures the moment for you. Now, one of the things that has come up and continues till today is that haiku can be very humorous. It's not necessarily, you know, very serious. And in Basho's time, and contemporarily also, people looked to haiku for humor. And also, you mentioned that irony is also important. Now, this is there's a famous haiku book called Dropping the Moon. And it's on a haiku by Basho. And this is not directly connected, but this is a haiku from, I think it's haiku, it's Basho's. Early winter rain, stepping on ice, the waters thunder. And so he went on to say, look around. What do you see? How does it feel? What emotions? Show, don't tell. Haiku is not a story. It's a quick expression of a moment in time. And he talks about too much talking. Don't enter any extra words. And then there's a website, a quarterly journal. Nancy, you asked about this. I'm not sure exactly why I wrote this down, but it's called The Heron's Nest. And it's modern haiku, and it's a quarterly haiku journey. Okay, so the next presenter, two presenters actually, and I'd never heard of either one of them. The first one was Lorraine Padden, P-A-D-D-E-N, and apparently she has a new book out called Updwelling. And she uses her satirical wit in service of her deep sensitivity to contemporary social issues, from domestic violence to racial and gender inequality and homelessness. And so that fits in with where Joan was coming from, too. Now, Joan, I don't want to be misleading, she was also wide open to the rest of this. She just expressed, this was sort of what she expressed in this much bigger picture. And so this is a poem by Lorraine Padden, a haiku. Clear cut, a woodpecker forages sideways. And so her guidance in terms of doing haiku is to read a lot and write a lot. And like Kaz said, nothing should be left out. The good, the bad, the ugly, dirty fingernails, everything is fair game. And she talked about haiku coming out of bearing witness everyone and everything. does that real being present to our lives. And then the next person, next presenter, was Dorotea Mendoza. And this is something that I was not familiar with before. But there's a form of writing, and it's called flash fiction. And she combines the idea of flash fiction with haiku. And in flash fiction, there are four elements: character, plot, setting, and tension, which are not unique to writing a short story, but flash fiction is shorter. I think she said 100 words as a guideline, than specifically 100 words, but it's short. And so the constraints, the word count, will force you to be conscious of how you use these elements. And she says the most famous example of flash fiction comes from Ernest Hemingway. This is sort of interesting. I don't know where they were, but he bet that he could write a story in just 6 words. And so if he was challenged, and he wrote this on a napkin. For sale, : baby shoes never worn. So that's considered short fiction, but it could also be considered a haiku. So now this is an exercise. Well, she talks about using haiku as an exercise to tell a short story. So this, which I'm going to read, is actually 3 haiku that tell a story. Jingles echoing through darkness. Giant shoes. I'm sorry, I guess this is what it's called. Jingles echoing through darkness. The first haiku. Giant shoes tapping jingles. Puts on his makeup, cigarette burning. He opens a drawer. This is the next haiku. He opens a drawer, removes a vial, syringe, wets the needle's tip. This is the third one. He's eager to play, bulb of his spitting corsage, filled with sweet poison. So that is flash fiction expressed in 3 haiku. Now, I have to confess, I didn't spend any time with this poem, so I'm not really sure that I get exactly what the story is. And so, again, the note here is about big roof haiku, all the current forms of haiku. And the challenge is, that's why I mentioned this earlier, the challenge is, do they expand haiku or do they take away from the traditional form? So that was Saturday. Now, on Sunday, Natalie starts out by reading haiku. She talks about haiku breaking the boundary of our perception and how everyone was enthralled by Basho and that Basho was Busan's teacher. Busan, who was also a painter. And then, I said this also, then Shiki came along and challenged Basho. And in doing so, he brought Busan out as a haiku poet. And again, here she asked us to write a haiku about a clock. So I decided to do this tongue-in-cheek. They're not great, but in the spirit of writing about a clock, it was hard to some way to take it seriously. The pendulum takes me to another world just in time. Clock, little boy learning numbers before his time. Now, this is a book by Billy Collins called Musical Tables. Now, probably a lot of you know of Billy Collins, but I'm going to tell a little history. Now, this is one of the presenters where I was trying to take notes in the beginning, and he was so captivating that I was just, I'm just going to enjoy the poetry. Every now and then, maybe put something down. But he was a wonderful presenter. And he's taught in a number of colleges, Sarah Lawrence, Columbia. Anyway, and so he's also been a teacher, a professor, which sort of played a part in how he presented it, his portion. And but he has a very dry sense of humor. You know, it's sort of almost by surprise you catch, because he's talking like a professor in a sense, you know, and he's talking about the history of haiku and all this, and then all of a sudden there's this little bing. I guess you could call it an aha moment, you know. All right, so this comes from what I looked up about him. He has been dubbed the most popular poet in America. He is famous for conversational witty poems that welcome readers with humor, but often split into quirky, tender, or profound observation on the everyday reading and writing and poetry itself. Now, here it is. He has taught at a variety of universities. Now, this is just these are three of maybe 10, 12 colleges that he's taught at. So a variety of universities, Columbia, Sarah Lawrence, Lehman College. He's won many awards. Again, they were so long, I didn't want to write the list. So his fame is unprecedented in the world of contemporary poetry. He had two terms as the U.S. Poet Laureate. He was the Poet Laureate of New York. In 2002, he was asked to write a poem commemorating the first anniversary of the fall of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center. And he read this in front of the joint session of Congress held outside of Washington, D.C. And the name of the poem was The Names. And I suggest you check The Names. Check it out. Very powerful. So he did talk about haiku. And he talked about in poetry, there's the use of comparisons, but in haiku, there is no comparison. And then he talks about the simplicity, and it was interactive. He answered questions. So in this question and answers, this first one is not his. I don't think any of these are his, but this may be in the context of humor. I don't know, but he passed these three haiku on. The first one is, it's not like anything to compare it to. I didn't write this right. Anyway, I'll try and clear it up. It's not like anything to compare it to. The summer moon. I love this one. I've grown old. Now my name rings a bell. Some of us are getting to that point. Now, I didn't write this. There's a photographer. I think his first two initials are D.H. D.H. Rubin, R-U-B-I-N. And I think he said he was taking pictures since he was a kid, like 7 or 8 years old. And so he had a long journey to getting to the present moment where he is, a contemporary photographer. But at a certain point, he came across haiku, and haiku became his guide for taking pictures. And so he talked about simplicity in taking a photograph. He talked about composition, structured but natural. And then he talks about time, more moment than object. A picture can be more moment. Haiku influence this moment. Time is moving along. Next moment, taking a moment. It's a moment in time without trickery or artifice. The picture is real, which means if you take a picture of a group of people, the photographer is always saying, well, here, Court, come over here next to Jeff, and then, Cal, why don't you come? So it's not stand back and move over one step.
Sensei. Never thought of it before, but taking a photo is like writing a haiku. It's capturing a moment. The right. Best photographs capture a moment that's indescribable, but tells you the whole thing in just a flash.
Yeah, and that was how he was guided by haiku. Yeah, absolutely right.
The parallel
right.
is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So, and he talks about, again, simplicity, everyday life. I'm skipping some stuff because I don't know what I'm talking about. Which is not unusual, I know. He mentions also wabi-sabi, the perfectly imperfect. And he talks about the practice of photography is not goal-oriented. And that there are pictures everywhere, and you must practice and learn how to see them. Now, one of the things about D.H. Rubin is they had, in a number of different presentations, they had slides. And so the depth of this is enhanced by being actually able to see his photographs. Oh, here it is. M.H. Rubin. Photography as a haiku practice. Pure seeing. Friends as models. Not cropping. Aiming for simple, beautiful, true. So he was talking about an archer giving a archery demonstration, you know, and a bunch of people, adults and children. And so he would pull the arrow back and his hand and the bow would be shaking. And he would let it go and it would fly over the target. And he would do it again and it would be shaking. And he would let it go and it would fly to the right of the target. And he did it one more time and he missed the target. So a kid asks him, "I thought you were supposed to hit the target." And his name is Kobe, and he responds, "Target everywhere." I have to read the Billy Crystal. Now these, I guess, they're poems in a sense, but they have the spirit of a haiku. They're short and they're direct, and they end by capturing your attention. They're like the exclamation mark at the end of the sentence. First one is called "Breaking Up." Like a nomadic dollar, I pass to the cashier. Behind the register, you are off to other hands. Twisting time. I am twisting again, but not like I did last summer, or the summer before, or the summer before that. I am twisting more slowly now because it's cold, and I have grown heavy, and there is hardly any wind. A memory. It came back to me, not in the way a thing might be returned to its rightful owner, but like dance music, traveling in the dark from one end of a lake to the other. But that, you know, the way that it ends is that last line in a haiku. View. In the summer sky, a cloud with its mouth wide open eats a smaller cloud. Flash. As my train sped by a schoolyard, I caught a tall boy missing a basket. A small hotel. When a match touched the edge of the page, my poem filled with smoke. Then a few words were seen to stumble out in nothing but their night, with no idea which way to run.
Wonderful.
And this is Angelus, A-N-G-E-L-U-S. Church bells from across the water. A breeze blows. The letter I was reading into the lake. When a woman in a low-cut blouse walked by, the grocer in the doorway raised his eyebrows, revealing the four lines in his forehead. Right, it takes you a totally different place. Again. Refrigerator light. The minute she slams the door, this is actually, it could be a haiku. When I said hello to a very small cowboy, he gave me the trigger finger. I think you have a sense of why I love this workshop. It was great fun. Yes. Well, thanks for listening. It was fun to share. And this sort of had the flavor of just hanging out and